We made this.
It's happening again.
Who are you?
I'm the doctor. This is Raz. This is Dan. Why don't I know about this? And who else does?
Very odd.
I can't help feeling that some of this is my fault.
Run for your life!
Maybe we should have broke that to you a little bit more gently.
Why is that?
Our final fight has begun.
Whoa. Stay away from me.
There's no use being squeamish. We've got the future to save.
We don't have any more time.
Welcome to the TARDIS Crew, a Doc Who podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm Baz Greenland, and I'm joined in the TARDIS by my son, Ben, co-host of the TARDIS Crew and the biggest Doctor Who fan this side of Gallifrey. How are you doing, Ben?
Decently, yes. Not the best, but I manage.
You're struggling because of your GCSE mocks, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we've just had 6 weeks of new Doctor Who.
True, and another one in under a month, so...
Absolutely. So that's why we're here today. We are here on the TARDIS Crew for our first, actually almost like a live review of New Doctor Who, haven't we? The first time on the TARDIS Crew. So we're going to be discussing all six episodes of Doctor Who Flux.
Indeed we are. Deliberate decision to hold off, as the serialised approach means it's probably easier to review it in one big block, knowing where all the storylines went in the end.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, we could have done weekly podcasts on this, but I actually think this was the right decision, actually, to take a step back and look at Flux when it's over and decide kind of, you know, just what worked, what didn't work. I mean, it's been 24 hours now since it aired, almost, as of the time of recording this. And I think my opinion has changed on a few things already, so yeah, the more I think about it, so I'm looking forward to getting into the discussion.
Yeah, I actually don't know your opinion on the final episode yet.
Cue it for live. I do talk to Ben outside of the podcast, that yeah. we don't just walk around in silence, but
no, we do, yeah, talk. Yeah,
you've had school today, so
yeah,
cool. Okay, so let's get into Doctor Flux. So Ben, what was your kind of general impression of Series 13 of Doctor Who?
As a whole, I think by far it's a massive improvement on Series 11 and 12. I didn't hate those series, but I felt they both lacked something a bit. Series 11, while feeling fresh, was a bit bland, and Series 12 was quite a carbon copy of Series 3. Whether I know the serialised approach works better for Chibnall, having... I've not seen it, but having heard reviews about him writing Broadchurch, knowing that Chibnall and Whittaker seem to be in their element there. And while Flux may not be the most perfect thing in the world, it's certainly a massive step up and an improvement, and definitely plays to Chibnall's strengths as the team are going out with 3 episodes left at the time of recording.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing about Series 13 that I think has been missing for the last couple of series is that Doctor Who has been exciting again. I've been genuinely looking forward to seeing what comes next. And I think, right, for Series 11 and 12, I mean, it's Doctor Who. I love Doctor Who. It's, you know, there are bad episodes, but generally as a whole, I'd always enjoy an episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, especially Series 11 and 12 have some of my most hated episodes of the revival. But I can look at Flux and say, I enjoyed every single episode, and I honestly don't really know how to rank them, because one inevitably has to be at the bottom, but I still quite liked it.
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? I mean, there are probably the two standouts, the Suntaran and Weeping Angel storylines, which, as far as I'm aware of, they were originally standalone stories when the plan was to do a standard series, and then obviously because of COVID happened and things got condensed, I assume they got absorbed into the Flux storyline.
Yeah, I believe they were tailored in, with hence the co-credit on episode 4, with Chibnall probably tailoring that in, and then the Suntaran one seemingly going to have been written by him anyway.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, though, episodes 1, 3, 5 and 6 are all new to the Flux storyline. Who knows, maybe Big Finish later down the line can do a Lost Stories season of the Lost Series 13 in the vein of what they did with Season 23 with the Sixth Doctor.
Who knows, there's certainly potential for the future. I think there was certainly moments in this I was thinking, oh, I can see a Big Finish spin-off there.
Yaz, Dan, Jericho, 3 years travelling the world. Just saying, or Carvanista, you know.
See, I think Jericho, Dan and Yaz, their travels, I know we're going to talk about episode 5 in detail, but I actually really like some of those elements and I kind of wish there'd been more. And I think this is probably, there are two things about Flux for me. Three things, really. One, it was exciting TV again. I was generally excited and there were stories in here. There's a couple of episodes I think I'd happily rewatch, whereas I've not really felt compelled to go back and look at episodes of series 11 and 12 since they aired. I mean, I will do. I love Doctor Who and we'll certainly discuss more of those in the future, but I've not really been compelled to do that. Whereas I think certainly Wars and Tarans and Village of the Angels, I thought there was some generally great stuff there and I'd happily go back and rewatch them. And actually, I think I'd be interested to go back and rewatch the whole thing. Now we know where it's going and seeing just how successful it was. I think on the plus side, I think Chibnall's strength is in these kind of serialised arcs. It worked for him on Broadchurch. And I've seen the first two seasons of Broadchurch. I haven't seen the third one. But the first season was really, really good. And I kind of wish he'd done this all the way through. I kind of wish that Chibnall's Doctor Who would have been 3, 4, maybe 5 to 6 part stories. I think that would have been much more interesting and really kind of made his mark on the show. On the flip side, I think there is so much in this 6 part story that people said they were confused by it. I wasn't necessarily confused myself. We watched Moffat's or two, and that can be a bit more complicated.
Plus, I fairly much understand Zagreus, so it will take quite a lot to phase me now.
Yes, Zagreus being the Big Finish story for those who only know the TV show. And I think there was a lot packed in there. I think the biggest issue, and I particularly when we come to talk about the finale, is that there wasn't really enough time given to really exploring some of these story elements. And the best ones are those ones that were the standalone, like the Weeping Angels episode, which had room to breathe. I think there's a lot in here, and I think some of it is ultimately disappointing because we didn't get enough of those storylines.
Yeah, they definitely could have shaved off a character or two to make more time for some of the others. Like, overall, and this I'll touch on this again later, I don't really see the point of the Grand Serpent. Like, he was in Vinda's flashback, okay, fine, and then suddenly in episode 5, oh, he's here now and he wants to take over UNIT. Why is he here now? What? I honestly think we could have done without him, especially with the Suntarans being main villains in the finale again and Swarm and Azure being around.
Yeah, I think there are a few elements that actually just felt like they were so squeezed in that they could have been dropped. I think, and there were some good storylines. Bell and Vinda, I thought the performances were great. I liked their little storyline, trying to be reunited. What did it bring to Flux?
Some of you may have heard that rumour that went around during the series that they might be the Doctor's parents, which, whether you like that idea or you don't like it, it would have at least given them a reason to be there. But as it is, they're just sort of, oh yeah, look, here we are, here's a nice extra characters and storyline.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Jacob Addison and Thaddea Graham were great. I like them, and I thought they brought some good. Actually, the one thing I really like about Flux were some really good performances, particularly from Jodie Whittaker herself.
Oh, yeah.
There was stuff that she was finally getting some material to work with that she suffered by not having in previous episodes.
Yeah, I'm very much going to touch upon her performance, especially when we get to the finale, because I thought she had some standout moments in that.
But there was so much packed in. I don't think Rinda and Bell really served anything. You got the Grand Serpent. Again, Craig Parkinson played quite a despicable villain, and I think there was some interesting stuff going on there. Completely pointless. Love having Gemma Redgrave back as Kate Stewart. What did she bring to the story? She hung around in some caves, and that was really it. You know, there were things that I kind of thought, why are they in there? And they just, there was so much in here. I think, in one sense, I really admire Chris Chibnall's ambition in just going through it and turning this big epic story over 6 episodes. You know, some really big grand ideas. You know, love it or hate it, making his own mark on the show. But there was just too much. And I think, you know, if this had been a 10-episode serialised, or even 8 episodes, maybe they would have worked a bit better. Because it was 6, and I appreciate COVID restricted the amount they could do, because the film took longer, there were more restrictions in place, obviously safety precautions and so on, so they couldn't do as many as they wanted to.
Hence making it the serialised, that was confirmed to be why.
Yeah, but I think I like the serialised approach. And it was exciting, appointment TV, week after week. I was generally thinking, I'm really interested to see what happened. Of course, it all hinged on the finale and the payoff, and I think that's where things are kind of up and down for me. But, yeah, there was just too much. I think Unit and Kate, the Grand Serpent, Ben and Vinda, don't think they really brought anything to the storyline, which is a shame, because there's some good ideas and good performances in there, but I just think that there's too much of it, in a way. Take those out. Focus a bit more on some of the characters, focus a bit more on the companions. I don't really get a sense of Dan as a companion. I thought that John Bishop was good. I don't think it was good. I don't think it was at the level of Bradley Walsh or Catherine Tate. You know, some of those kind of really as a companion. Actually, Bradley Walsh and Catherine Tate gave us some great companions. I don't think he did the same. But he was fine, you know, a little bit more of Yaz. But again, I don't necessarily think that there was enough there for Yaz. Mandy Gill felt like she was a bit more confident in the role. But yeah, there was just so much, you know, and there was stuff I liked. You know, I'm going to ask you a question then. What are your 3 biggest positives of Doctor Who Flux?
Okay, one of the main positives, the visuals on this thing just look amazing. Like, something I didn't really see people talk about, which I thought looked really cool, was when you saw the aftermath of the flux and, like, the destroyed planet just half floating in the sky just looked amazing. Also, Jodie Whittaker, her performance has improved massively. Not to say it was bad before. She is my least favourite Doctor as of now, but I don't hate any of them. I'm liking her more and more. And then to end on other positive, I kind of want to lump Dan Carver and East of Jericho in one, because they were all brilliant characters that I really looked forward to seeing. And as we'll see in the finale, poor Jericho.
Jodie Whittaker's performance, absolutely. I thought when she had, there were moments when she was allowed to shine, she was really good. I thought, particularly in episode 5, yes, there's a little bit of a kind of, the whole storyline around the Timeless Children and what's happening to her feels like she's almost like an abuse victim, which I don't think really sits right with me. So yeah, the first female Doctor feels very reactive, a victim of abuse, and isn't really getting a chance to be the Doctor because bad things keep happening. And I don't know, I kind of feel like, I'm not saying that the first female Doctor should be tough as nails and winning the day all the time, but I just felt like things keep happening to her rather than her driving. She doesn't have any agency a lot of the time. And that was still the case, I think, in Flux for the most part.
Yeah, she definitely doesn't have some of that presence that the other Doctors have. And a lot of things happen to her rather than happens at her, almost. And I may as well talk about this now, considering we're talking about her. The scene in episode 6 when she was being interrogated by the Grand Serpent and she was just deducing him, being really sarcastic while he was getting really annoyed, I feel that's one of her standout performances. That was a moment which I've been lacking this era, where I genuinely felt she had the command of the room. She had the presence of the Doctor. She was on top.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the one nice thing about the finale was that you got to see the Doctor, or Doctors, I should say.
Oh, yeah.
Three versions of the Doctor kind of out there, kind of taking control and being a Doctor, and that was fun to see.
Well, I'd say two of the versions were. The third one was kind of just...
imprisoned, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, so we've got to talk about Jodie Whittaker as a Doctor there. The visuals, absolutely. The visuals, and I think the music as well. I do love the music on this era of Doctor Who.
Ah, yes. While Murray Gold is still far and away the best for me, and I have felt Segun Akinola's music has been a bit up and down during Series 11 and 12, I thought it was a massive step up in Flux, and there were genuinely a few tracks playing that I was like, okay, I really, really like this.
Mm, yeah, no, I think there's some really good music in this. So, yeah, visuals too. And what was the third thing you said?
Dan Jellicoe and Carvin Easter.
Yeah, they were fun. I mean, I really liked Kevin McNally as Professor Eustachius Jellicoe. What a great name.
Oh, that is a fabulous name. I love the Doctor's reaction in episode 4 where he says that and she's just like, what, Eustachius? Eustachius? That's a brilliant name.
Yeah,
which, it was great. In honesty, it is.
Yeah, and I really like those scenes when they're trapped in the past. Dan, Yaz and Jellicoe together. They were some really quite fun scenes there. So I thought they were good. Mm. Actually, Carvin Easter was a lot of fun. It was Craig Ellis played, didn't he? Played Craig Ellis, who played... It was just fun. I mean, we'll talk about the ending with his race at the end, but later on, I'm not quite sure how that really played. But, yeah, there was a lot of fun banter with that character. And I hope he's back, given the connection to the... What we're going to call the Division Doctor. Is that what we're calling Joe Martin's Doctor?
I mean, the main term is Fugitive Doctor.
Yeah, Joe Martin's Mysterious Doctor has a kind of a few names now. So, yeah, there were absolutely some good stuff there.
Yes, especially as Carvin Easter mentions the brain poison thing he has. I'm very 50-50 on, is Chibnall just going to leave that alone, reference it, or is Carvin Easter going to come back? Because if not, Big Finish are totally making the Carvin Easter Chronicles.
Yeah, absolutely. So my three positives then. I thought that it was a great story for the Centaurans. They weren't played as joke villains. You know, it was audacious and over the top. And, you know, it was basically the Centaurans' versions of Journey's End. It was kind of, in a sense, it was big and bold and dramatic. But I really liked the return to the classic design. I loved a lot of the Crimean War stuff on War of the Centaurans. I thought Jonathan Watson as Centauran Commander Stenk was fantastic.
He was a different one in episode 2, but
yeah.
Same performance, yeah.
And Dan Starkey playing a slightly, still slightly comical, the chocolate scene in the corner shop swings to mind, but I think not quite. I mean, I love Strax. Strax is a wonderful character, but not. He wasn't quite as jokey as that. I think, they felt a little bit more like credible villains, which I'm not sure they've really ever done. Not probably since Days of Pertwee and Tom Baker.
Yeah, I'd say Centauran Experiment was the last time on TV they properly felt like a menace, because Invasion of Time, they just come in at the late mark, run around the TARDIS and trip over all the time. Two Doctors, they're randomly there to get blown up and stabbed, and then the Revival has treated them seriously, but also mainly as a joke. Still nice to have some jokes implemented here, like, I know a lot of people have taken criticism with the chocolate scene, but I'm glad that a lot of people appreciate the wanting to ride a horse joke.
Yeah, I love that. I know some people found that the jokes didn't land at all. I thought that was great. And, I think, yeah, so definitely the Centaurans. And talking of villains, I think Sam Spruill as Swarm and Roshinda Sandal as Azur, I thought they were fantastic. I'm not too happy the way they kind of just get wrapped up at the end, but I thought visually, performance, the way they commanded the room, I thought they were fantastic and memorable villains.
The closest villain comparison I think I have to Swarm would probably have to be Eric Roberts' Master. The camp nature. Also, Swarm's shoulder pads, that's very Eric Roberts, big dress for the occasion gown thing. And just the sort of really camp, over-the-top, smarmy, but also very deadly nature. I think fits very well with that Master.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, yeah, the Weeping Angels. That was a great episode. And I thought it was some really kind of fun stuff with them there. I thought it was generally quite menacing and creepy.
Flaming Boy.
Yes. I'm not sure it's beats. Doesn't know he's going to meet Blink. And actually, I don't know, the closest is probably Time of Angels, Flesh and Stone. I thought it was a great two-parter back in Series 5. I thought this one was pretty good, though. I thought this was... This and the Centauran episode were the two that I felt they're the ones I'm going to remember as, you know, what were your favourite episodes of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor? I'm going to say War of the Centaurans and Village of the Angels. And there was a lot going on there. We'll talk about the episodes, a breakdown in a minute. But I think, yeah, and I think just generally, it was appointment TV. It was exciting. People were talking about it. You generally didn't know where it was going to go. It hinged on the payoff, but I thought it was... I had fun throughout. I generally enjoyed it. Some things didn't work for me. Some things absolutely worked for me. But I was enjoying the ride all the way through.
Yes, very much agreed. And it's probably the first time since Peter Capaldi left where I have genuinely felt like I have really, really, really enjoyed New Doctor Who. Like, one of the episodes in particular, which we'll get into later, I genuinely had a big smile on my face watching a segment of that episode.
Some of the negatives then before we kind of go, because I think there's definitely a mix and balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think for me, I've always picked one. I think some of these characters, I think you're the same, some of these characters, the storylines didn't actually go anywhere. I thought that was, I was frustrating.
Yeah, not to bash on the performances, because all the performances were great. Mm. It's just, did they really need to be there?
Yeah.
I feel I'm mainly directing this at the Grand Serpent, which feels a bit mean, but...
Yeah, I kind of like the Grand Serpent. I thought some interesting stuff with the Grand Serpent and Kate. But all Kate did was hang around some tunnels and then push him through a door. It's like, again, I know that... Is it generally known that Kate and UNIT are going to get back in one of the specials?
Yeah, it's been confirmed UNIT are back for the Centenary special.
Right, okay. So, yeah, that's fine set up. But I think the trouble I've got with Flux in terms of its resolution... is, as a six-part story, it needs to... Yes, it can have some loose ends to follow up that will be done, resolved in the specials. You know, in the same way that, for example, in the same way that Time of the Doctor, Matt Smith's swan song, wrapped up quite a few loose ends that may have been dangling from previous stories as well. But it feels like there's a lot of unanswered questions coming out of there. And I thought, like, the Grand Serpent and Kate and the UNIT stuff, and don't get me started on the timing of UNIT's origins and the whole ranking of Alistair Lethbridge-Stewart, because...
Yeah, Colonel? That what?
Four points? That's it. What was... You know, because I assumed, okay, this whole thing alternate reality and Flux, you know, messing with time. I know some other people, I know who've spoken about it. I know like Andy Francomano, who basically oversees the Lethbridge Stewart range, I think he made a comment about, oh, I'm sure it'll get resolved. Things that time is messed up is going to get resolved. I thought, oh, okay, I'll go with that because it seems weird. It's like, surely, not understanding the ranking system, getting the dates wrong, you know, setting it, well, basically before Web of Fear, which doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, they got the logo right for the unit, and they got the uniforms right. So
yeah,
nice.
But and then it was like, no, we just bad writing. I was like, so, I mean, you know, like Andy and a lot of people, you know, I've written for the Lethbridge Stewart in the Candy Jar books, you know, and he's a character quite close to my heart now as well. I haven't written for him. And to see it kind of messed up so badly, it just feels like... I know in the grand scheme of things, no, most people won't even bat an eyelid, even the people who know the old classic episodes, but it just feels like if you're going to tap into Doctor Who chronology, get it right. I know there are things about UNIT and the dating and when did it set, and there's always 70s and the 80s and so on, but even so, it just feels like it's just creating more headaches. And I thought it could have been quite easily fixed. So, but, you know, maybe I'm too much a Lethbridge Stewart fan there to kind of to dwell too much on that. But what about you in terms of any other negatives? What other issues?
I mean, I don't have any stories I want to bash on, which some people might. Ah, okay. Main thing, we teased answers about the Timeless Child for six episodes after this. It's like, oh, look. hunting down Carbonista, who's with Division, then episode 3 going through the memories, and then episode 5 meeting Tectaeun, who has the fob watch, and then in episode 6 the Doctor gets the fob watch, and after the 6 episodes of teasing, we essentially get, well, Doctor, you can have your memories, but they're in this thing, so open it if you want. And she just goes, we need content for my final episode as the Doctor, so I'm just going to drop it in the TARDIS briefly until I ask for it. It's like, we get somewhere, but nowhere near as satisfying as I think this build-up has been, especially since the Timeless Child answer teasing has been going on now since March 2020.
Yeah, Barbara Flynn as well, another great actress. I thought Tectaeun, I really liked her performance, really started to delve into the Doctor's past, and then they cut her off. And I'm like, it's a complete waste. I just like, oh, there was, I found that frustrating too, because I felt like they could have been more done on that. And again, this is probably where I think so many stories all kind of fighting for attention, that it just becomes like, well, they lose, like Steve Oram as Joseph Williamson from the 19th century. What was the kind of the point of all that storyline with the doors?
I guess it's because he was a real person who dug a bunch of tunnels and no one knew why. So I guess it was Shibnall going, well, there's companions in Liverpool. Ooh, here's this interesting historical figure who has a mystery. What can I do with that? How can I tie it into an arc? Ooh, I know, let's have him walk through a lot of doors into different locations as a mystery box, and then essentially have him trying to make a shelter for the human race because he understands what's happening, and the Sontarans get through into it very easily anyway.
Yeah.
And episode 6, he leaves like midway through.
Yeah. Again, it's another rich storyline. It's like, you could have a whole episode or episodes around the Grand Serpent, around what happens with UNIT. If you're going to, you know, even though they, I think, mucked up the timing, I think you could, if you wanted to do that, you know, Joseph Williamson and the tunnels, there's a rich storyline there. There's Bell and Rinder and what they kind of purpose that they serve. You know, they're also like Jericho, Dan and Yaz, their travels across the world in the beginning of the 20th century. You know, some really rich material there, but given such fleeting attention because there's too much going on.
Especially, yeah, as in episode 6 when the Doctor reunites with them, it's been like, how long has it been? Oh, 3 years. So for Yaz now, it's been 3 years, add another 10 months between Timeless Children, Revolution of the Daleks. They have a hug and it's all over. It's all fine.
Well, like, yeah, I don't know. It's, I think that's frustrating. I think the last thing drawn before going to the episodes, because there are some positives now. I don't think this is actually a negative battle. There were some issues, and there were some positives too. I think the issues are that there's so many storylines fighting for attention, you don't get enough focus on a lot of them, and they become pointless as a result. And you end the episode going, well, what about this? You know, what about Carbonista and his entire waist got wiped out? Whoops, never mind, off you go, kind of thing. It's like, there's a lot of material here. It just kind of doesn't get the attention it deserves.
And especially on the main criticisms I've seen in the last 24 hours going out of the finale, which I hope will be resolved at some point, at least touched upon, they didn't actually undo the damage of the flux. So you have the damage of the first event, then part of the damage of the second event. So the universe has been shrunk a bit, and they're just not going to mention that.
Yeah. We'll get on to the Vanquishers and talk a bit more about the ending. I think the Vanquishers is probably the most problematic episode for me because of the sheer amount of unanswered questions and things that just kind of like Joseph Williamson just walks out through a door halfway through the episode because there's no more time for his character. It's like, you know, there were things that don't work. I think, you know, if I'm going to say what's the weakest episode, I think it's the Vanquishers. Purely because you're like, really, 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 that's it, kind of so much of the time. But
just before we go on to episode 1, towards the end of episode 6, when everything's almost sorted, and the Doctor goes, oh, almost forgot about Kate, that reads as Chibnall going, oh, forgot I added in that plot line, let's quickly wrap that up.
Absolutely. So let's go into the episodes a little bit more detail then. So Chapter 1 of Flux, the Halloween Apocalypse. What were your thoughts on the opening episode?
definitely a bit of a messy start, but I had hope that a lot of this would be touched upon later, and in retrospect, yes, pretty much everything in that episode was tied together in some way, whether it was resolved or not. And it was a bit of a fun mess, I feel. Mm. Like, the visuals of the Flux were great, that Weeping Angel scene.
Mm, definitely.
Dan and Carvanista. Them especially, they were great together.
Yeah, I there's some... The Halloween Apocalypse is let's throw everything at the kitchen, in the kitchen sink. And it's exciting. Yeah. I think that I remember watching episode one going, wow, there is so much going on here. I'm generally excited to see what comes next. And I wasn't expecting to enjoy the ride as much as I did. It goes on at 200 miles an hour, doesn't really let up. And I think that's why I preach episode two, then slowing things down. But it is exciting, it is thrilling. That Weeping Angel scene was terrific. I thought that was a really good, probably one of the most creepiest Weeping Angel scenes of the series.
Fair, if you're airing this on Halloween, it's set on Halloween, and you have Weeping Angels in your series, you're going to do something with them that episode.
Absolutely. So there's some really good stuff there. There's, you know, the return of Swarm. I say Sam Sproul, I thought was fantastic in this. Rashida Sandell as Azula, I mean, I don't really get what the whole thing of her as a human in hiding and then becomes Azula.
See, I have a theory about that. You see in episode 3, they're captured by the fugitive doctor, and then you see in this episode, Swarm encased in his little prison and breaking free. I think Azula's prison was imprisoned as a human on Earth.
Maybe, hidden. Yeah.
Although they never really explain that device. It's like the device beeps. You know they would only activate that in an emergency. Well, who would? The Division? I don't know. But that's as far as I can get with Azula as a human. That's what I'm going with. Yeah. It was her prison.
Yeah.
Hence Swarm releasing her from it.
Doesn't really make a lot of sense, but when you get Azula and Swarm together, they're fantastic. And that's, as the series progresses, they're a lot of fun. So I thought that was great. Yeah, right. Dan and Carvanista. That was a real good comedy moments there as well. I thought they played off each other really, really well.
You look nothing like Four Bears. Just the booping of Carvanista's nose was...
Yes. Yeah. It was everything in the kitchen sink in that episode, but I think it was fun, it was exciting, it was setting up so much, and it generally made you intrigued to see what was happening next, because there was a lot of stuff happening in that episode. Too much, maybe? I don't know. You could have shaved a couple of things off there.
And... Like, I don't think you needed Williamson introduced that early on for like that first scene. Maybe save him to episode two or something.
Quite possibly. And I think when the Centaurs turn up at the end, there's like, oh, suddenly they're there too. But obviously that is set up episode two. So,
which you knew.
Yeah, it's fun. It's action-packed. You know, it ends with that thrilling... Lupari shield defending the Earth. You know, I quite like it's quite hokey in a very kind of Rusty Davis kind of way, but I like the idea of every human has a dog that looks after them.
Yeah, that is a great idea, honestly. And the music on the cliffhanger was brilliant too. And as for the people saying, like, where have the Lupari been? Literally every single other invasion of Earth killing humans. I think the Flux is the first time the Lupari knew it was coming, so they deliberately set off to rescue the humans. Because when Earth's stolen by the Daleks, for example, how were the Lupari meant to predict that?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, Chidor hadn't been in Flux yet, so there you go.
yes, that is also true.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a fun action-packed opening. A lot going on. It wasn't really much of an episode in its own right, except for possibly the Lupari defence of the Earth get Flux at the end.
Yeah, the Doctor looking for Carvanista, I'd say, is the core spine of the episode, running down it with everything else, like, growing off it.
Yeah, but it was good, it was exciting, it was fun, and there was a lot of promise of what's to come, and I think, you're right, while it wasn't necessarily satisfying in every respect... Thinking back, I think pretty much everything that was set up in this open episode was resolved in some form.
Yeah, and there was a line from Dan near the beginning where he says, like, what's the point of being alive if not to make others happy, which I thought was basically the line that cemented him as companion material, and created the whole Evil Dan meme for those who know what that is.
Sorry, what's the Evil Dan meme?
A Doctor Who edit Twitter, Doctor Who poop, if you're watching or listening, hi, took that line and a few others and basically made Dan evil, saying, like, what's the point in being alive, and just cutting it off like that. And that's got its own gif now, and the whole him attacking the Sontarans in the next episode had a whole thing. So yeah,
okay,
that's become a whole meme in itself, which is
fair enough,
interesting.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was a solid introduction for Dan as well. Yeah. I mean,
I really like Dan, to be honest.
He's fine. I don't think he's in my top companions, but yeah, he's decent enough. He's entertaining enough. John Bishop has some charisma about him in the role. So yeah, I liked him.
I might honestly say he's might be my favourite Chibnall era companion, but
ooh, better than Graham.
Just.
We'll see.
I've had a lot more time with Graham, so maybe once I get more time with Dan, it'll slide. Who knows?
Cool. Okay, let's move on then to Chapter 2, War of the Sontarans. I thought this was the first episode of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, and I thought, yes, I really like this.
Especially with the Ark stuff being contained to the side. You get that little side bit of Yaz and Vinda in the temple, and then the two main strands, the Doctor versus the Sontarans in the Crimean War, and Dan versus the Sontarans on modern-day Earth.
Yeah, I thought there was good stuff. I mean, the idea of the kind of Sontarans in the Crimean War and history's changing. It's kind of like a temporal training ground with Russia, now Sontar. You know, there were some really great ideas at play here. And the visuals as well. I mean, I love the Sontar on the horse. But, you know, a big, big survival vibes and the cheetah people on the horses from the McCoy era.
Yeah, definitely. And possibly the best reference of the series, probably tied with the War Machines one from episode 5, is when Commander Ritzkor mentions, or Skak, whichever one it was in the Crimean War, mentions Lynx, saying Lynx staked his claim to Earth as he does in the Time Warrior, placing his flag in the ground, and this is just the Sontarans going, well, we've claimed it, we may as well follow up on it and kill a few people while we're at it, and ride a horse.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it was great. And Sarah Powell as well as Mary Seacole. She was great. You know, Doctor Who can bring historic characters to life in such a kind of vibrant way. And I thought Powell did a really good job with Mary Seacole.
Especially the Chibnall era. That era definitely knows what it's doing with historical figures. I must admit, I was kind of hoping, because I think the timing's just aligned, to see if they referenced the 12th Doctor audio made last year with the Doctor meeting Mary Seacole, because I was thinking, the timings align just right? It might, but last, no. Oh, well.
Oh, well. But no, I thought she was great. I think they kind of dump her to one side to sort of watch troop movements for half the episode, which is a shame, but I really liked her. Was it her hotel, was it?
Yeah. It's the real thing as well. Mm. It's the forget what the hotel's called now. What's it called? The British Hotel, I think.
Yes, that was it, yeah. No, it really kind of brought that real-life character to life. You know, it's a real-life historical figure, and I thought she gave a lot to that performance and played off Jodie Whittaker really well. I think it's a good episode for seeing Whittaker kind of in action, actually, and kind of in the thick of it. And, you know, there's a lot of great visuals in there with the Sontarans versus the Crimean soldiers.
Yeah, that scene, just the almost the massacre of
yeah,
that.
Well, it was a massacre, wasn't it?
Oh, that was brilliant to watch.
Yeah, so, you know, visually, you know, narratively, I got a lot out of this episode, and I really enjoyed the Sontaran characters in this, particularly Jonathan Watson's Skak as well. He was great.
And then Dan and later Carvanista on their own, almost diehard-esque mission through the Sontaran ship, and Dan making his wok puns. Oh, and the Tempora gag.
Yes, the symbol, that was a great gag, actually.
Yeah. Carvanista shaking his wet fur all over Dan.
I think the first two episodes did a lot with Dan and Carvanista together, and I think that kind of fades off as the storyline progresses. But there was some really kind of great interplay between them. I think that's probably Dan's best stuff, was actually with Carvanista.
Especially as one of the main things about Flux, when you look at the Doctor, is most of it she actually spends away from the companions. Like, she's with Yaz for pretty much all of episode one. She split up from them almost immediately in this one. Pretty much the same in episode three. Quite fast in episode four. Just, she doesn't see them in episode five. And then episode six, she is with them, but she's also in two other places at once. Yeah. So she doesn't get a lot with Dan, actually.
No.
The two of them don't interact as much, so hopefully we'll see that in the last three episodes Dan has. He's a very short-lived companion, which I'm sad about.
Yeah, well.
Poor Dan.
Oh, well. But yeah, I think it was a strong episode, and I think, actually, as with the Angel's Wand, the Flux stuff was a little bit distracting for me. You know, when it went to the temple on
Atropos.
Atropos, that was
the planet,
it.
Well, temple of Atropos on the planet Time.
Yes. And, you know, it was good to sort of see Yaz and Rinda working together and seeing that some of that storylines converge. And obviously the arrival of Swarm and Azur was great. They, you know, again, really great. You really got to see him ham it up and, you know, have a lot of fun. And yeah.
Swarm just storms into that room, takes command, and that cliffhanger as well. That's quite...
Well, yeah, let's talk about... we had some really good cliffhangers, didn't we?
This is my second favourite cliffhanger of the series, only beaten by the end of Village of the Angels, to be honest.
Yeah. But yeah, between the defence of Earth in episode one and then, yeah, Yaz turned into this kind of...
More,
the kind of angel-type character in episode two, and of course episode four as well. You know, there was some big, really fun cliffhanger. I mean, obviously, if you could have a six-part story, you know, go classic Who and have some big, silly cliffhangers, you know.
Oh, yes. Something I think I will mention is, as well, the titles for this series. I think The Vanquishers is a very 60s-esque title. Like, I can easily imagine you're watching probably the reconstruction of the Daleks' master plan, then it says next episode, The Vanquishers. Mm. It's very...
Yeah. I mean, I thought the weakest titles were the first two. The Halloween Apocalypse and Wars and Tarans felt a little bit...
Episode five's a clunky bit of a title.
Maybe, but I mean, it was fine.
Episode three's title's grown on me a lot, actually.
Yeah, I quite like episode... Let's talk about episode three, then. So episode three... Once Upon Time, then.
Obviously a title that makes people confused, but then once you learn what the planet's called in episode two, it suddenly makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I must say, I am quite proud because I managed to predict a big part of this episode, the Doctor's overlaid onto the fugitive Doctor, reliving her memory of her and the Division versus Swarm on Time in the past. I actually predicted that whole storyline because the title seemed quite almost like very long ago on the planet Time, and so yeah, glad I worked that out.
Yeah, I mean, when Jo Martin turns up in Chibnall's Doctor, which is always great, and I think it was a real pleasant surprise to see her turn up here and kind of building that backstory of the Doctor.
Yeah,
the stuff that was teased and ultimately wasn't really resolved in Flux, but you know,
yeah,
scenes when Whittaker is playing Martin's Doctor. That was superb too. I thought Whittaker was really good in those scenes.
Slight shame that Martin didn't get a lot of her big, and now Swarm, you're defeated speech. Like, Whittaker takes over a lot of that. Mm. But for what she's in, Martin's great.
Yeah, I'm sure Martin's going to be back.
She wasn't in the finale.
No, but she'll be back. I mean,
centenary special, mark my words.
Absolutely.
Possibly her last appearance, though, but who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. And I almost wonder. I'd love to see more of her story. Hey, big finish again. Jo Martin's Doctor.
Oh, yeah, they are totally doing a series of Ruth Doctor as in the Division. There's like at least three spin-offs, possibly four, you can make from Flux alone.
Mm.
Nick Briggs is already writing scripts, I imagine.
Absolutely.
Well, for when he has the license to.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, again, a lot going on. This was another very arc-heavy one after War of the Centaurans. And, you know, there are things... I've noticed, I'm looking at the IMDb credits, and Joseph Williamson, played by Steve Oram, is in every episode. And, like...
Actually, I don't think he's in episode four.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, he's popping up all his time, but not really doing anything. It's the first episode with Craig Parkinson's Grand Serpent and his backstory to Vinda.
Doesn't do much here, but, again, what he's in with this and the rest of the series, he is very good at it.
Yeah, he makes for an interesting villain. I think it's also the debut of Thaddeus Graham as Bell in this episode as well.
Yes, it is.
So there's a lot going on, layering a lot more happening, and, yeah, it's...
Mm.
And what did you? It's a weird. It's one of those ones at the same time, and I can't remember what happened because it was all these kind of dream sequences and the thing that struck me the most about this episode was the Joe Martin Doctor scenes.
I think I understand this episode. I get what it is, but that might be in part to me having already guessed part of it. But what a lot of people, I think, don't appreciate about Chapter 3 is how experimental it is. Like, it is a very experimental episode of Doctor Who. Once you learn what's going on and that the Doctor stuck them all in their own path, you're like, oh, okay, and then you can more start to enjoy that for what it is. But beforehand, it's like, okay, what's happening? Why are they here now? And, yeah, honestly, it's really enjoyable to me. Very big experimental stuff, because I'm a keen advocate of Big Finish going back to more experimental, so it's lovely to see the TV show also going down that route for a bit.
Yeah, I certainly appreciate it, and I think, you know, like the first episode, you kind of go along for the ride, you're enjoying it, you're having fun. It was still very much, this has come to the midpoint of Flux, and, you know, teasing a lot of stuff. You've got also the debut of Barbara Flynn as well, who obviously will find out who she is in episode 5 as well. So,
although a lot of people already, I think a lot of people managed to predict it pretty much straight off the bat that she was Tectoon. So, well done to them.
Yeah, but well, that's a great thing about Flux, is that kind of guessing what's going to happen next. And for the fans of Doctor Who, you know, the people who, I think the people who went, oh, I'm confused, the people who are probably more, I would have thought for the most part, just casual viewers going, what's going on here? Well, actually, I think for the fans, I thought this was a great story to dissect week on week.
Yeah, especially this episode, I think. If you're a long-term fan like me, so that also probably helps as well as my guessing, it's definitely more interesting to go, okay, this is an episode I haven't really seen before. Well, I like what it's doing here, or I don't like what it's doing here, depending on your views, but yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those ones, it's a lot of teasing. I guess ultimately, not really much happens out of the back of this episode, but there's a lot of kind of interesting character stuff there, and teasers for stuff that's going to happen that, you know, again, does or doesn't get resolved satisfactorily, but, you know, there's a lot of kind of interesting ideas at play here.
I honestly think this does more with the Timeless Child memory stuff than the Doctor getting the Fobwatch and then just dropping it into the TARDIS at the end of the series. Because while that's a very much, well, that's really annoying what you've done there now. You teased us all this way. This is a, ooh, we're getting more. Ooh, Joe Martin. Ooh.
Yeah.
Carbon Easter.
I like the connection of Carbon Easter as well, so that was good. So,
Old Swarm, he gets more of the screen time this episode as Swarm, because I'm not sure if you realise that they're two different actors.
Really? I think those are
The older Swarm, the one you see imprisoned at the start and then on the throne in the flashback here, is a different Swarm to the one plaguing 13.
Oh yeah, look at the IMDb here, it's Matthew Needham. I did not realise that.
Yeah, which I think is a very nice touch. It's like a very much a regeneration-y sort of what he does at the start, which...
Yeah. I mean, that's it. Yeah, it's the other thing. It's a great showcase for Swarm and Azure as well in this episode as well, you know, as well as teasing those Timeless Child elements.
And then that cliffhanger is pure, like, fan service to... Yeah, the angel has the TARDIS, which is literally 13's. The angels have the phone box.
Yes, that's going to be on a t-shirt somewhere now, isn't it?
It's going to have to be the t-shirt sequel, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh, yeah, that's a great teaser as well. Yeah, these cliffhangers are great. Chapter 4, then, Village of the Angels, which is co-written by Maxine Aldridge and Chris Chibnall. So the only one that's not Chris Chibnall fully writing.
Hence, I think this was one of the ones meant to be in Series 13 originally, so hence I think Chibnall's involvement here was more tailoring it, like doing the bell segments and...
Yeah, and actually, that's as much as I like Bell as a character, I found those ones really distracting. I kind of wish they'd just focused on the Angel storyline in this episode.
In this episode, it did feel out of place with the horror vibe they were going for the Angels. They cut away to, oh look, there's this planet, and oh look, there's the monster you've bought off eBay absorbing people. I think that mask is apparently bought off Wish, apparently, but...
Okay, passenger.
Yeah, just remembering when they were filming pictures of him, and there were genuinely people going, oh, he might be the shadow from the Armageddon Factor, which, honestly, I love that theory.
Right. I think, yeah, and before we get into the episode, then, I think Village of the Angels and War of the Centaurians, I almost would love to have seen what they would have been like in isolation of some of those stories, because I think they probably would have both been stronger for it.
It's like Terror of the Vervoids, and fans have made edits of that, taking out the trial scenes. I can see people doing edits of this one especially, taking out the Bell stuff, so it still has the cliffhanger leading into Division, but you don't go to that planet.
Yeah.
So it's got very Pertwee vibes, this synopsis, I feel.
About very much so. The
psychic experiments and cursed villages. And
Oh, it's straight out of Pertwee's Doctor, isn't it? So, big fan of this episode?
Yeah, genuinely. This was what I would like to call, this was the Weeping Angel horror movie of Doctor Who. Especially that end part where they're all coming out of the wall and breaking down the doors. That was a pure horror movie.
Yeah, absolutely. There was some really kind of rich material here. You know, obviously we've got Kevin McNally introduced as Professor Jericho and Anna Scholey as Claire Brown, obviously, who had appeared in the first episode. And, you know, I really like that storyline that I assume Maxine was writing before it became part of the Flux storyline, with the idea of this kind of psychic who basically was essentially linked to the angels in some way, and this was Rogue Angel and the scientific studies. Mm. It was all really kind of proper, kind of old school sci-fi horror.
Mm. Slightly disappointing that the whole her knowing the Doctor in episode one actually wasn't, and that was just her having seen the Doctor before.
Yeah,
I had a different theory that like she was stuck in a time loop with an angel going round and round and round, which I honestly would have preferred, but I came up with the theory, so, you know, obviously.
But yeah, there was still some good stuff here, absolutely. And I thought the scenes when the angels are kind of breaking in, and you know, the angels, it's in the streets themselves, and this kind of dark kind of foggy village as well.
Yeah.
It was, you know, proper kind of old British classic horror here.
Like, in the graveyard, especially, like counting the gravestones, and then when Jean and Gerald are at the end of the village looking out into the void where it's being quantum extracted, and they turn around and the path just has one solitary angel on there.
Yeah, there's some great moments there, absolutely. They never resolved what happened with the village being taken out of time, which frustrated me.
How did Yazdan Jericho get out? Like, I guess the way you assume is either Division or the angels put it back, but this episode also goes away to say the angels are doing this because they're cruel, so I could hardly see them putting it back, so it must have been Division or something.
I guess it's one of those, located the Doctor. It's one of those frustrating, unanswered questions that actually was a really cool idea, and then they went, oh, we'll just gloss it, you know. And again, I feel like I'd like to think at least there is a whole host of unfilmed or cut scenes which kind of fill in some of the detail. You know, how did Yaz and Dan and Jericho get out? You know, I would have loved, you know, and had this been longer, had they been obviously a maybe if the COVID restrictions had been, we still been allowed them to do maybe 8 episodes, I would love the episode which shows them getting out and then on their journeys and focus on that entirely. That would have been a really great episode in its own right.
Yeah, in all seriousness, if Big Finish do end up doing a spin-off with these three, make episode one how they get out of the village. Big Finish love to plaster over the cracks, and yeah, here's one for you.
It's a pretty big crack to plaster over, but
well,
hey,
it's not a crack in time.
It's not, no. So yeah, a lot going on there in this episode. Really, really creepy. You know, I love them kind of getting to the house. You know, the replaying of the angels, the image of the angel becomes an angel, and like that scene when the angel came together and they set it on fire was fantastic. Yeah, such a great image.
I am ripping up the paper and then it reforming and like that, and the angels using Jericho's voice through the monitor.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
Jericho's just like unfazed, like, I admire the talent you have there, but this is really rude. Please stop it.
Yeah, there was a real tension there, which was great. And the scene when they're in the tunnel and the arms coming through the walls as well. You know, really, really great stuff. You know, imagine that, it's going to scare little kids who are watching this.
Yeah, and dust falling in Jericho's eye, and suddenly he's on the other side of the barrier with Yaz and Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was some.
That was a good transition, actually.
Yeah. And you know, the mystery as well of the abandoned village in 1901. Again, wasn't really explained what happened to the people. Were they just slaughtered? I don't know, by the angels. But
I mean, as I said previously, the episode explains the angels are really cruel. And if it was the division angel luring it all over here as a trap for the Doctor, is it so the Doctor can help these people? Or is it the more likely theory that the angels genuinely were like, well, we're going to have some fun?
I don't know.
Especially with that. One thing about the angels in this episode that I didn't like, I have to say, you don't survive twice. Now, either that's just because it's quantum extracted, or maybe it's division angel ability, but if not, Rory?
Hmm. The whole battery farm element from Manhattan episode.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. I mean, it was a cool effect when they crumbled away, but...
Or Gene and Gerald, yeah.
Yeah, but it's still a bit like... Also, like, the girl, Poppy, I've seen a few people mention this. It's like, Gerald dies. Ah, I didn't like him anyway. Yes, and what about this other woman who died right in front of you? Do you not...
People tend to gloss over their trauma, like Carver and Easter in the final episode. So I don't know. I mean, the frustrating thing about this episode is that there are a lot of plot holes that aren't really filled in afterwards, because it moves on to the next thing. It's in such a rush to deal with the Flux storyline and the Timeless Children storyline. There's so much crammed in here that it makes it slightly weak by association. But at the time watching it, it was a great piece of TV.
Oh, yeah. And that cliffhanger at the end, the Doctor becoming an angel, was just like...
I would say that is generally one of my favourite Doctor Who cliffhangers.
That is the best one of the series by far. And it is probably one of the ones which led to me and a lot of other people thinking for that week, so is the Doctor going to be in episode 5? Are we getting a Doctor-light episode? Or was it more likely, which... My theory that her in the Next Time trailer, which... I was right about, was actually just a ploy, and it gets resolved immediately. A bit like Revolution of the Daleks and her in the prison.
Yeah, it was crushingly disappointed, because it was such an amazing cliffhanger. And I know in Classic Doctor all the time the Doctor would be shot or gone down or fall into a trap or going to die horribly, and then suddenly the next episode within 30 seconds, oh, he's fine. And then it almost becomes a trope, but... I don't know, such a good cliffhanger, and I just kind of felt there could have been a cleverer way of getting out of it rather than just, oh, it's a transport device,
yeah.
But we're a bit cruel.
Just want to talk about the ending bit then, like the credits being interrupted midway, which I guess Chibnall was like, well, I want to do this scene, but that would kind of disrupt the cliffhanger, so while the scene wasn't needed, I guess, but I like the way he did it in the middle, and also the end credits music, it was like... oddly atmospheric and creepy.
Very much
which
so.
Really fit the episode.
Yeah.
So, and then Kate in the Next Time trailer.
Absolutely.
That was just like, wait, hold on, what? I thought she'd be back in the centenary, not this early, but hey.
But doesn't really do anything. But anyway, we'll come on to that in a second. So I think overall, Bridge of the Angels is a good episode, Doctor Who. I think it's probably the best episode that Jodie Whittaker has. I would say... along with War of the Centaurs. There's a lot about War of the Centaurs I really, really like as well. So they're my two favourites.
Oh, yeah. Village of the Angels was my favourite. And we'll get into this a bit later on, because this isn't going to be a very popular opinion as we get further down the line. So episode 5.
Yes, Survivors of the Flux, then.
Talked about this one a bit already, actually.
We have a lot. This is the one when you kind of go... when they start throwing more stuff into it, this is the point where you start ramping stuff up to the conclusion. And they throw in the whole Grand Serpent and UNIT, which is all mucked up. And...
I honestly felt this was almost like if you treated it as 5 and 6 as a two-part finale. Mm. This was part 1, but I came away from this episode feeling a bit empty. Like, I haven't rewatched it, but I don't know what to think of this one. It's like, honestly feel which... I needed to see episode 6 to fully evaluate this one. And now having seen episode 6, I still genuinely don't know what to make of this. It feels like the outlier, like if I was thinking of Flux, this one might be skipped over in my mind.
I think the Survivors of the Flux is the trouble that it has. It's trying to add more when it should be taken away at this point. Yep. We should be wrapping up and resolving.
Admittedly, it does start with Williamson, wrapping him up, getting him involved, why he's there, which I appreciate that.
but not in a particularly satisfying way. It's like,
yeah,
they've thrown him in because it's Liverpool. It's like, it feels like, I wonder if William's storyline was actually another episode that was completely lost and then just scattered across the flux.
Yeah, I get maybe Chibnall saw, well, got Dan's character and he was like, ooh, look at this interesting character who did a mystery thing which we don't know about. I'll use this. And when the serialised, he was like, oh, I really wanted to do this.
Is there a
way I can tailor this in to the big overall arc?
And I think the answer is no. And the other thing, you've got the whole Rinder and Bell storyline starts to get a little bit kind of tiresome at this point as well. As much as I, particularly Thalia Gray, I think she's really endearing in her performance. I like the character of Bell. But you get the point like, oh, and she's got the planet and then Rinder's going to get there and then she's pulled away to Earth. And it's like, it's just dragging out attention, but there's no connection with them to the wider storyline. There's no connection to the Doctor. I know Vinda's met the Doctor and Yaz at this point, but...
And Dan,
yeah, absolutely. But it's like there's no connection with Bella, and you kind of feel like, why is this going on and on and on the storyline? And it's dragging away, and it's taking up from the other time well spent, like the Tech 2 and stuff with Barbara Flynn's character and the Doctor. I think that is the best bit of this episode.
Oh yeah, by far. And like, also you could have done a bit more with Kate. Like, I spent a lot of the episode going, so we've got about 15 minutes left. When's Kate going to show up? But like, the Swarm as your and Vind scene on that planet where they were harvesting the energy crystals or whatever of the people. Mm. Honestly, that was only there to, so Vinda could have a pair up for the finale. As like, a lot of the characters in the finale, they end up with a pair-up, and this was so Vinda could get it. Bell and Carvanista, yeah, no, that was a fun dynamic, actually. And then seeing the, wait, what's this big force coming through? Oop, the Sontarans again! They're actually back for revenge, and
yeah,
they're on their way.
Yeah, not a bad cliffhanger at all, but it's...
probably the weakest of the series, maybe?
I think it's the weakest, absolutely. And I think because you've got this really interesting storyline with Tech 2 and, you know, essentially the Doctor confronting an abuser, really, is what we're talking here. And this is why it's a bit of an uncomfortable storyline, but there's some real meat to the drama around it at the same time. And I think Jodie Whittaker does some really good work here. It's not quite her being talked at like she was with the Master and the TARDIS children, you know. Yeah. She's more interacting. She has more agency with it as well. And I like the scenes with Tech 2 and the Doctor in this episode.
But then her going like, was what the Master told me true? And fans holding their breath in excitement. Yes, it was. Oh, well, there we go. As a lot of people might have thought. Yeah. But yeah, it was definitely like, wow, yeah, it's the whole, oh, well, actually, you kidnapped me. You experimented on me and stuff. I quite like how Tech Taeyoun's like, well, maybe the morals of this definitely aren't the same. But she's like, well, how is that any different to you taking people from across the universe, especially Earth, and making them your pets? They're your experiments, which isn't really the same analogy, like same thing, but she's challenging the Doctor in a way which it's almost like, is that really the main thing you're going to challenge, Doctor? And especially like her creating the flux because the Doctor's in the universe. That's your fault.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. This is your fault.
I think this is when it started to fall apart, because I thought I wanted more of Tech 2 and the Doctor.
Yeah.
And they're challenging each other and confronting what's happened. And you have to have all the exposition around the flux. And then just as getting interesting, just you've got the FOB watch, Azur and Swarm turn up and they kill Tech 2. And they're like, no, that's the storyline I want. That's what actually I'm invested in. And Flynn is such a really good actress as well. You know, I've seen it in many... I mean, you probably won't be as familiar with her.
Yeah, she's done a few big finishes. Like, she's in the big Fifth Doctor anniversary box set in January, but...
Yeah, I mean, I know her from a TV show from the 90s called Cracker, which she was great in that. And a lot of kind of 90s drama as well. And she was really, really good. And another great addition to Doctor Who, you know, I thought she was a great guest actress, but there wasn't enough because there were 700,000 storylines all vying for attention. And it's like, so you've got that going on, you've got the travels with Dan, Jericho and Yaz, which was so much fun. I love that kind of high kind of 30s SEAL adventure, almost Indiana Jonesy type stuff going on. I wish there was more of that.
Dan and Jericho in the temple, and it's like up and down with the ropes. Yeah. That was in the original trailer, I think. Yeah, it's just being like, hiya, as Dan falls to the floor.
I want an episode of that, and then an episode with the Doctor and Jack Toon, and then it come together. But no, it's like there's little bits here, and then you've got throwing Bell and Mino Carvanista, then you've got Vinda trapped in the passenger, and there's just like, there was so much. And you've also got in the Williamson as well. It's just like, there's too much. Mm. Dial it back.
An idea I've just had, if they had been able to do 7 episodes, which would have affected the specials, which is why they didn't, but you could have done like what they did in the Tennant era and make, I don't know what people call these episodes, but like while you get Mandip Gill, Kevin McNally and John Bishop filming a Doctor Light episode of their adventures, you as like episode 5, on the other side, episode 6 is being filmed, which is Companion Light, and it's the Doctor and Tectaeun.
Yeah.
Like that what they did with like Midnight and Turn Left in the Tennant era.
Yeah, that would have worked brilliantly. That would have been great. I almost wish. Yeah, you got the Centenary Special. I kind of wish they just, in one sense, just not bother with the other 2 specials and add the episode count to this and done 8 episode flux, because it might have given things more room to breathe.
Well, I believe I heard like the content director at the BBC was basically like, "Can you do a special for the Centenary during this?" Yeah. So they added 9. Although I think, rather than make the Centenary special with the 9th one, because that seems to be hinted at in episode 6 and planned, and the Daleks one next time, I think the middle one, like the Eastery special one, that was Chibnall going, okay, well, let's make that episode 8 so the Centenary can be bumped over to the Centenary special.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of get why logistically from a kind of a filming point of view, but yeah, I kind of wish they'd given 2 more episodes to Flux, because there's so much material here to work with. Even as frustrated as I am with some of the unit stuff, Craig Parkinson's Grand Serpent is a really interesting, vile character.
The snake he uses.
Yeah, I wanted more of that as well, and then more with the Kate stuff, and
the classic unit uniforms. Still, points to the War Machines reference and the correct unit logo and the Brigadier stock footage.
Yes, yeah.
Terror of the Autons episode 4, if you didn't know.
There you go. So there's some kind of lots going on there, and I think the trouble is there was a lot I loved about episode 5, but it was all too, every storyline was too short.
The best way I can describe episode 5, even though it had like, it was basically the Timeless Child exposition part of the series done with Tectaeun, but less exposition-y, empty filler is what I feel with this episode. I feel it's like, so we can't fit this Tectaeun stuff into episode 6. So I guess we need one more episode in there. So, guys, got any ideas for what to fill the rest of the episode with?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, cut the Grand Serpent and Kate. Yeah. And just have... Kate can be part of the Resistance on Earth. That's fine with it, yeah, with the Centaurs.
Kate is there in like a Captain Jack capacity. Mm. Although she met the Doctor when Jack didn't. But it's like, to set up the return in the specials.
Yeah.
In the Centenary special, like, when at the end of episode 6 she says, "I like this incarnation, I hope I meet it again." That's, like, hint, hint, in case you didn't get it.
Yeah.
They'll meet again.
Which, that was the best scene with Kate. That was the end scene, because actually, let's talk about Kate then. What did Kate do apart from hiding some tunnels?
Went on the run for 5 years? But it's like, yeah. Right, so she contacts Osgood. She leaves a message. "Osgood, I'm going dark." And after that, well, Grand Serpent takes over unit. So what does Osgood do? Does Osgood also go on the run? Does Osgood quit unit? Does Osgood work under the Grand Serpent reluctantly? It's like,
there's no time for any of that.
Exactly. And also, which, I know I'm being nitpicky Big Finish fan here, but at this point you have, like, Sam Bishop and Josh Carter and all the Big Finish unit team, what are they doing as well? Come on.
Mm. And I think it feels like we'll probably go more negative as we go along. And there's some, we talked about some of the really good stuff that we enjoy about episode 5 and going into episode 6. But I think it's where the kind of flaws really kind of show as well, because Flux hinged on a decent resolution. I think it was an okay resolution. It wasn't satisfying enough for me.
Fair. Well, we may as well get into episode 6 then. So, you can start, because this is not going to go down well for me.
Right, okay. So, what did I like about episode 6? I like the Centauran stuff. I like the fact the Centaurans were utterly ruthless, you know, leading the enemies, Daleks and Cybermen, into a trap. You know, they were utterly ruthless, and, you know, it showed them at the kind of their best in a way. And I thought, yeah, the Centauran storyline, it was big, it was bold, it was audacious, but it was fun too.
Oh yeah, the Centaurans were really great in this. Their joy at basically being like, yes, Alliance, except you root and scum, you're still our enemies. I love that line in the broadcast, and then they literally just go, hey guys, die. Yeah. And then they're destroyed, and the Doctor then goes, nope, and kills the Centaurans too. Which, considering she kind of committed, probably not genocide, because I doubt it was all the Centaurans, but a lot of Centaurans dead, she didn't really seem to care. Although, a thing I have about the 13th Doctor, her morals seem a bit weird. Suffocating all the spiders, throwing an Asian man to Nazis, doing this, harvesting the kinetic power of school children.
Yeah, I don't know. But talk about a Doctor. For Jodie Whittaker, this is a great episode.
Okay, as I said, that interrogation scene is where she has the presence, where she is literally deducing the Grand Serpent's entire history. Like that, being sarcastic about it, and he's getting visibly angry, and she's mocking him, and then he tries to snake her, and she's like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm not really fully here, so what can you do? See, she was in control, and that's possibly my favourite Doctor performance from Jodie Whittaker thus yet. And then her arriving with herself, it's like, Chibnall really decided, instead of 13 and Thasmin relationship, 13 and Yaz relationship, Thasmin, as a lot of fans want, time to do a 13 and 13 relationship.
Which was quite fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. Reminds me of the short Space Time Stephen Moffat wrote, which you might not have seen.
I've seen it.
Yeah, there are two Amys, and Amy's flirting with herself, and then also Clara and the TARDIS, where you have the two Claras flirting with herself. It's a very certified Moffat moment. Mm. But the use of, I'll say the two 13s, because one of them was basically just a prisoner in Division the whole time being tortured. But the two of them together, that was a really fun addition. I really liked that, especially them in the TARDIS. You speak. Oh, okay. And then trying to work out, right, this me will go and sort this out, and I will go with you lot and sort this out.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was some real fun stuff with the Doctor and real fun stuff with the Centaurans. You know, there was a high energy about the finale, and they're the moments I really, really enjoyed.
Seen some people mentioning the 13 maybe ripping off Kedroria, I think that's how you pronounce it, an 8th Doctor Big Finish audio where there were 3 8th Doctors, which maybe, but I doubt that was intentional.
Yeah. I think as well, let's talk about this different storylines then. So you've got Vindo and Diane inside the passenger trying to escape. So that's kind of one storyline that's going on. Mm. What do you think of that?
It's nice to see them try and do that, and Diane's quite resourceful, and then they pretty much escape quite easily, and they're like, so now we're just sort of stuck in this dimension. Oh, look, I conveniently have this device the Doctor gave me.
Yeah.
Which is nice. One thing about Diane, though, about this whole thing, why does she dump Diane at the end? She gets really mad, like, you were late. Now, I know she's gone through all this trauma of being kidnapped by aliens and stuck in passenger and had to do this, but as Dan says, it's hardly his fault he was late. Carvanista kidnapped him. Cut him some slack. I know we can cut you some slack too, because you were captured, Diane, but come on. Dan also went through some stuff.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it was quite interesting that actually it wasn't, and they get together and they're happily ever after.
Exactly. It was hinted at so much, and then suddenly it's like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Didn't play to convention, but yeah, I mean, that was quite a fun scene. Ultimately, I don't think we really went anywhere. I still don't reach the point of Vinda or Belle. I mean, the reunion was lovely. Quite like Belle and Carvanista and the Doctor working together, and then obviously teaming up with Jericho and Claire as well to kind of infiltrate the Centaurans. Yeah. There was a lot of kind of big fun stuff there, and yeah, Jericho's...
To talk about Jericho then, Transmat not working. But the fact he's like basically going, these 2 years, wait, technically 3 years, but as he says, too, have been the best of his life, and, like, he's content to go. He did what he could, and then Zondarran comes in, and he's like, I am Professor Eustatius Jericho, Scourge of whatever it was, he says. You know, I really wish I'd written my autobiography. That would have been a brilliant title. And then, I will shoot you. I really don't think you have time. And then just pushing his glasses up as the flux tears him apart. That was sad.
That was sad and big and dramatic. Mm. And I think it's a testament to McNally how good he was to Jericho that in three episodes, you're like, no! Yeah.
So, fun fact, for those who don't know, if you want to see Kevin McNally on TV Doctor Who again, the story you're going to have to go and watch is The Twin Dilemma.
Ooh.
Go to Big Finish, he does a lot more there. I plug Big Finish too often on this podcast.
You do. I think Big Finish, we need some kind of sponsorship going
on. Come on, pay us.
So, yeah, I thought the whole Grand Serpent storyline just kind of, they locked him through a door on an asteroid. It's like, that's it. I feel like there's more to come with him and Kate.
Excellent. He might be in the Centenary, but honestly, I doubt it. I think if Chibnall was getting another series after these specials, we may well see Carvanista or the Grand Serpent again. But considering now after this, he's got three separate stories, Eve of the Daleks, the Eastery special one, and the Centenary, and then they're gone, because it's all filmed now, it's all done.
Yeah.
Honestly, don't think we'll see them back again.
Yeah.
Bell and Carvanista, though, were really fun together. I liked that. And the Doctor just dropping in, like, who are you?
Yeah.
Yes, well, what are you doing here?
But then the Lepi being, or basically the entire race being sucked out of an airlock by Centaurans, and it's kind of like, never mind.
If we had seen that, if we had just cut to the shield and seen just the CGI specs, like, floating out like a fluffy flux.
Oh, dear. A fluffy flux, oh, dear.
Yeah, just a fluffy flux into space. It would have had more impact.
Yeah.
Still, I still do think, though, even despite that, Carvanista's, like, howl of pain, and then his revenge when the Zondarran's about to be fluxed, and he's like, oh, no, I'm not stopping this. You are dying right now.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah. Our last couple of points there before we kind of wrap up then. I think the way they disposed of Azure and Swarm was really frustrating.
Yeah, and ultimately, the whole time thing, it was nice to see Jodie play a fourth version of herself. It did come across a bit like, nice cryptic, but also it's basically, let's do four knocks again.
Yes.
Although the whole no regeneration, yeah, because that's definitely going to go away. Well, we know she's going to regenerate.
Yeah.
Also hinting at the Master.
Yeah, I mean, he has to be back. Sash Dwan is great as the Master, so I really hope he is back. And then, of course, the whole fluxing kind of, does it destroy most of the universe? I mean, we just don't really care. I don't know.
I don't think it destroys most of it, honestly. Something I will say, I quite like the clever resolution of how they stop the final flux event. Just absorb it into passenger.
Yeah, that kind of worked. Yeah, it's like Star Trek, you know, you kind of just go with the science fiction of it.
I quite liked it, and when Diane just mentions that, she honestly seems like she must have picked up a lot inside passenger in the time she was in there. Because, like,
absolutely.
She learns how to, the alien gun suddenly, oh, can't we put it in here and then just dump Stan? Like, does she think she's too good for him now?
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, forgetting Kate at the end, pretty much.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, overall, like, okay, the Doctor basically, yeah, just going, gets the fob watch and just drops it into the TARDIS. Don't give it to me however much I ask for it until I really, really ask, is very much them going, we need stuff for the Centenary. Will we get the memories back there? At this point, I don't think she's ever going to get the memories.
I don't think so.
It's all a big tease, it's annoying. But just to end, like, the episode talking, controversial then, this might be my favourite one of the series.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, this was the episode where I was just sat there during the middle segment where, like, the Daleks and Cybermen were destroyed and then Vinda was just having the time of his life and the Flux was destroying the Zondarrans. And the visuals. I just had a huge smile on my face. Did fade when Jericho died, but then he came back afterwards. Poor Jericho.
Oh, poor Jericho. But, oh, that's good. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the ride and then kind of went, oh, but what about this? What about that afterwards? But, yeah, it was a fun. And I think about Flux. Flux was a fun ride.
Oh, yeah. Definitely massive improvement. Serialised with Chibnall strength. While people may call this finale a mess, and it seems to be the worst liked episode of the series so far,
it's not.
It genuinely is my favourite one of the series. And as I said before, with Flux being like the best thing since Capaldi in my eyes, this is the first time since a Capaldi episode I've sat there with a huge smile, like, I really, really loved The Vanquishers, which a lot of people won't agree on this, and that's fine, but to me, it was genuinely just so fun. The visuals, the destruction happening everywhere, the running around, the 213s, it was just... I was like, I'm glad the Ood survived as well.
Yeah, well, you could see the Ood.
Yeah, I did notice, actually, the Ood had its translator orb, but it was, like, midway there. It had its gooey brain stem and then the ball rather than the wire and the ball. Also, I swear I heard in the TARDIS during the episode the sort of Hartnell Troughton hum of the TARDIS. I kept hearing that throughout the episode, so I think that was a nice touch.
Yeah. How about the drop thing? The TARDIS going wrong.
Exactly. That, now, I'm guessing that is going to be continued in, because if you've seen the poster and the graphic for the New Year's Day special, that seems to do that. And it might well have been hinted at when, like, in Revolution, as a lot of people picked up on, she says, like, 4 minutes to Asarka. It's like, does the TARDIS really take 4 minutes now? So something is definitely happening. Like, originally I thought it was because time was breaking down and that should have been fixed when they fixed the Mori on Atropos, but they're definitely leaving that bit to be resolved later down the line, so I hope that does work out.
Yeah, because that felt like a whole story that seemed to just drop off out of nowhere. So
just put a door in the floor, put some cobwebs on the ceiling. It's like, and now they're dismantling the set. So do you think they ever cleaned it after that, or they just left it like that and they were like, art?
I don't know. I mean, it's not one of those things that just kind of got just dropped after a couple of episodes because there was just too much going on. But yeah, I mean, who knows? But
yeah, overall, best Chibnall series, I'd say.
Yes.
Although, one, I am glad Flux is done now, because I feel, while it may have needed a bit more breathing space, in my eyes, this was probably the right amount of time to stretch the story over 6 weeks. And now for it to be ended, I'm like, you know what? That was a fun ride. But I feel I may have just gotten a bit bored had it continued any longer. And I am glad we're going back to more self-contained for these three specials. I'd like to see a serialised story again in the future under RTD or whoever comes after him, sure. But I'd rather Series 14, at the very least, is self-contained again. I don't want two serialised ones essentially back-to-back, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Just because Doctor Who, at its core, is an episodic show. So, serialised is good as an event, but like the Time Lord Victorious event we had, I'd love to see another one of those. But give it a few years before you do it again. That's my feelings on, like, Flux and serialised stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing for me then, I think it was the best of the three Chibnall series. It played its Chibnall strengths, but there was too much thrown into it. They should have cut some things out and just focused more on some of the really good story elements.
Yeah, Chibnall, I think he did too much. He gave himself too much to do. He almost did Moffat, but even more.
Cool. Okay, so the last thing then before we kind of wrap up then, we did actually reach out online to see if anyone had any comments on Flux. So we had a couple of mixed comments here. So Oscar Groucho said, Doctor emerges shuffling and blinking into the streaming air with an overarching tale oddly reminiscent of early Hartnell epics, the most of the post-05 epoch. Densely populated, possibly oversewn with threads, it provides Chibs at his best with long-form storytelling and improvement. So, real positive one there. Also, James Stock on the finale said, my thought is the Flux just wiped out all the universe. So where are Dan, Yaz and the Doc going to explore? All the Daleks got destroyed and they're back for Christmas. Dan's house got shrunk. Where was he staying? Zero progression in 6 episodes from the Timeless Children.
Okay. Zero progression. I wouldn't say it's zero, but, you know, fair enough. Where's Dan staying? Well, he...
The TARDIS, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, although before that, he must have been staying somewhere for a little bit before he was offered. And, like, when he eventually leaves the TARDIS, unless he dies, please don't kill Dan.
But, yeah, I think that what's the Flux done to the universe, that's the kind of biggest issue for me. What, you know, and hopefully that'll be explored at least some in the final 3 episodes.
When they say, like, all the Daleks wiped out, though... Again, a lot of people have been saying this. And it's like, really, I doubt every single Dalek in the entire universe would have gone to that alliance. There are some still out there. Not every single Dalek would have. They might have been like, in case this is a betrayal, keep back here, we must keep the Dalek progression alive. It's like,
yeah, it's weakened the Daleks and the Cybermen, but I don't think it's certainly destroyed them at all.
They'll come back stronger.
Yeah. Colin Spencer said, I have loved this series, but got very lost this episode in trying to follow all the many strands being concluded, but then felt it was all rushed and still things to be resolved. I hope Chimwa does close their arc out before the inevitable regeneration in autumn 2022.
Yeah, it definitely feels there are some strands you can put in the specials. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it was resolved in my eyes. I found it satisfying enough. The comparison I have with this, I think, with Flux and what these specials seem to be like, it's like Peter Davison. It's getting really good now, but it's too late. Like, Davison got season 21, then he hit stride from, like, The Awakening onwards, and he got Caves of Androzani at the end, and then it's like this with Chibnall and Whittaker.
We also asked our fellow podcasters over at We Made This their thoughts as well, and a lot of Doctor Who fans on there, so I've got some thoughts to share from the podcasting team. First up, Dan Owen said, I gave up trying to follow it. The definition of stream of consciousness writing.
Moffat on drugs.
Yeah. Matt Latham said, I mean, thinking about it, was Dan, Vindo and the mother of his child, whose name I can't remember, really relevant to the plot at the end? Which is a fair shout there.
It was, like, episode 3 was an experiment. It's an experiment in an experiment. Flux in itself was a move to do something new. Did it succeed? Did it fail? I guess that's up to you to decide.
I don't know. Couple more then before we wrap up. Craig McKenzie said, it made very little sense and there was a catch-all solution that neatly resolves a problem at hand. There was next to nothing to grab onto emotionally. Most of the characters have very little to them. I couldn't care what was going on because I didn't care about the people involved. Carvinus had literally lost his entire species and it's played as, oh well, these things happen.
I mean, maybe, but I still think, like, his howl of pain and then his downplayed bloodlust at killing the Sontarans. One last point I forgot to mention, sorry. When Jericho dies, Yaz and Dan have been travelling with this man for 3 years. To Yaz, Dan and Jericho have essentially possibly even surpassed the length of time of Graham and Ryan. Do they bat an eyelid when Jericho dies? Does anyone...
I don't know.
The Doctor seems to be the only one who you see on screen react, and she knew him for the least of the TARDIS team.
Yeah, so I would say as well, I think the one thing that Flux did a very good job of actually was giving some weight to some of these characters like Jericho, like Claire, like Bell and Vinda. There wasn't enough of them to really kind of... I can understand the lack of emotional connection because there wasn't enough time spent with them, but I kind of got a sense of them as characters, particularly Jericho.
There were a lot of characters in the series, but they were all good.
Yeah. Kurt, who was on our Heaven Sent podcast, said, I would say overall it was an entertaining episode. It just didn't really succeed with most of the points that Craig raised. Genocides everywhere, which is out of character for the Doctor. No real empathy for the eradication of entire species. The run of Flux has been a step up, though. Even though I wasn't as fan of Village of the Angels as some people, it didn't amaze me, and Once Upon a Time is probably my favourite of the run. John Bishop, while solid, didn't meet my expectations.
I mean, as I was saying, 13th models, they're a bit...
Yeah. And finally, Tony Black said, just caught up today, what an absolutely bleeping mess. Flux in general, but especially the episode. Part of me keeps trying to justify it by saying that all Who finales end with grand universe-shattering stakes and the Doctor taking villains down by lots of magic science, etc. And yes, that's true, but think of the ones that work brilliantly. The Big Bang. Huge stakes, universal reboots, etc. What was the core emotional beat there? It was Amy Pond willing her imaginary child friend, her madman in a box, made real back to life. It was science fantasy, and that's what drove all the silly timey-wimey stuff we all knew would be sorted out, because it always will be. Who is best when it has that core dramatic beat, either for the companion or the Doctor, that I prefer it when it's the former, to be honest, to hold on to, because it's what we hold on to.
Yeah, I mean, Flux is one of those big bombastic finales, and you get stuff, yeah, like the Big Bang. At its core, that is four people running around a museum from a stone Dalek.
Mm. Yeah, I think it was too big. And, or it was actually too big, but there were too many things going on. I think
a bit too ambitious for its own good.
Yeah, and I think if they had streamlined some of the elements, it would have been stronger. But
Yes.
Yeah, so it was a satisfying ending for me, just. I think, I know you enjoyed it more than I did. Yeah. I did enjoy it. I just felt that things like the Azure and Swarm just get swept away really quickly, and the Grand Serpent and so on. It's like, why have some of these storyline elements if they're not really going to go anywhere?
There's nothing new with Chibnall, I feel there. Like, Swarm and Azure being wrapped up like that. Click my fingers there in case you didn't hear.
Yeah.
Same like thing happened with Ashad in The Timeless Children.
Yeah.
He was a big presence and then, boof, gone.
Yeah. But still, I think overall, it was fun and exciting. And even though some of it didn't make sense and there was too much packed in, I think it was memorable.
Yeah. When people look back in 20 years' time on the 13th Doctor era, Flux is probably going to be one of the big standouts that you're drawn to immediately. And hey, if someone makes a 6-hour film edit of it,
quite possibly. And that's the end of our episode discussing Doctor Who Flux. We will also be reviewing the Groundhog Day shenanigans of the Dalek New Year's Day special, Eve of the Daleks, in January 2022. And coming up next, we'll be having our TARDIS crew Christmas special, where we'll be going back to the 8th Doctor Big Finish with the Chimes of Midnight.
Yes, we shall.
So thanks for joining us for our latest episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to the TARDIS crew and give us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Doctor Who is all we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. As I said, next time we'll be discussing the Christmassy Big Finish story, The Chimes of Midnight. But until then, somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, somewhere else the tea's getting cold.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Right in the childhood.
Obviously because of the inclusion of Firestar and Iceman, all the bets are off because... Yeah. They weren't friends in the comic books.
No, it was bizarre. Like, Spidey and Iceman have become friends, and I wonder if they've become friends because of because of the show or
maybe
vice versa. But yeah, and we did notice a lot. Firestar was basically just Human Torch. They could have just Jenny Storm.
She really did. Although really did just have the Human Torch.
I did get my hopes. I heard the last name Jones.
Pick a disc.
Evermore I've not listened to. There's a special that's on Disney Plus, actually, which I think is her playing Falkwell, which I might watch.
So good. It made me appreciate... I said after I watched that, I was like, every album, I don't care who releases it, every album needs something like this to accompany it, because it's... I think it adds so many layers to an album when you get to hear the artists specifically talk about why they wrote the song, and the producers are in the same room, like, talking about the process. It just makes the album that much better. So that's a requirement now. Every album that comes out needs a documentary.
Frame to Frame.
I just want to say, I really love your philosophy about no matter how good or bad a movie is, there's a lot of effort that goes into it. I really like that philosophy, because I find myself grappling with that. It's kind of like, it's really easy to tear something down because the finished product that comes out in the cinema or on streaming is nominally bad, but it has actually had a fair amount of effort that went into it, regardless of how that translates.
I mean, Cats is a really good example of that, actually. If you actually look into the story of the visual effects on Cats and how it was literally the day before release, the visual effects team was still working on that movie.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.